Hello and welcome back to The Power of Now, a guide to spiritual enlightenment with Gilda and Barbara. Today we're doing a book study on A New Earth, Awakening to Your Life's Purpose, written by Eckhart Tolle, and we hope you have your copy so that you can follow along. Today we are on Chapter 2, Section 2, Ego, The Current State of Humanity, The Illusory Self. My name is Barbara Wainwright and I'm here with Gilda C. Monet. Welcome, Gilda.
Thank you. The illusory self. The word I embodies the greatest error and the deepest truth, depending on how it is used. In conventional usage, it is not only one of the most frequently used words in the language, together with related words, me, my, mine, and myself, but also one of the most misleading. In normal everyday usage, I embodies the primordial error, a misperception of who you are, an illusory sense of identity. This is ego. This illusory sense of self is what Albert Einstein, who had deep insights not only into the reality of space and time, but also into human nature, referred to as an optical illusion of consciousness. That illusory self then becomes the basis for all further interpretations, or rather misinterpretations of reality, all thought processes, interactions, and relationships. Your reality becomes a reflection of the original illusion.
The good news is, if you can recognize illusion as illusion, it dissolves. The recognition of illusion is also its ending. Its survival depends on your mistaking it for reality. In the seeing of who you are not, the reality of who you are emerges by itself. This is what happens as you slowly and carefully read this and the next chapter, which are about the mechanics of the false self we call the ego. So what is the nature of the illusory self?
What you usually refer to when you say I is not who you are. By a monstrous act of reductionism, the infinite depth of who you are is confused with the sound produced by the vocal cords or the thought of I in your mind and whatever the I has identified with. So what do the usual I and the related me, my, or mine refer to?
When a young child learns that a sequence of sounds produced by the parents' vocal cords is his or her name, the child begins to equate a word, which in the mind becomes a thought, with who he or she is. At that stage, some children refer to themselves in the third person. Johnny is hungry. Soon after, they learn the magic word I and equate it with their name, which they've already equated with who they are. Then other thoughts come and merge with the original I thought. The next step are thoughts of me and mine to designate things that are somehow part of I. This is identification with objects, which means investing things. But ultimately, thoughts that represent things with a sense of self, thereby deriving an identity from them. When my toy breaks or is taken away, intense suffering arises. Not because of any intrinsic value that the toy has, the child will soon lose interest in it, and it will be replaced by other toys, other objects. But because the thought of mine, the toy, became a part of the child's developing sense of self, I.
And so as the child grows up, the original I thought attracts other thoughts to itself. It becomes identified with gender, possessions, the sense-perceived body, the nationality, race, religion, profession. Other things that I identifies with are roles. Mother, father, husband, wife, and so on. Accumulated knowledge or opinions, likes and dislikes, and also things that happened to me in the past, the memory of which are thoughts that further define my sense of self as me and my story. These are only some of the things that people derive their sense of identity from. They are ultimately no more than thoughts held together precariously by the fact that they are all invested with the sense of self. This mental construct is what you normally refer to when you say, I. To be more precise, most of the time, it is not you who speaks when you say or think I, but some aspect of that mental construct, the egoic self. Once you awaken, you still use the word I, but it will come from a much deeper place within yourself.
Most people are still completely identified with the incessant stream of mind, of compulsive thinking. Most of it is repetitive and pointless. There is no I apart from their thought processes and the emotions that go with them. This is the meaning of being spiritually unconscious. When told that there is a voice in their head that never stops speaking, they say, "What voice?" or angrily deny it. Which, of course, is the voice, is the thinker, is the unobserved mind. It could almost be looked upon as an entity that has taken possession of them.
That's so true. And I know that I've met somebody who's still like completely identified with their thinking mind and such.
Mm-hmm.
It's interesting because it seems that they want to be spiritually awakened, but they're very attached to their ego. And because they're attached to their ego, they think that they're getting real insights, but instead of the real insights, instead of going to their higher dimensional mind, they're grabbing their information from their egoic mind. Mm-hmm. And they're making it seem like maybe like their spirit guides are the ones leading them to all these great like discoveries, but really it was just like their ego this whole time. And that's just kind of what that reminds me of.
I know that there are people that are really mental, meaning they're in their head all the time and they can't get out of their head into their heart. And I think that's one of the things that I talk about in my class about coaching is, our goal as a coach is to help people get out of their head and get into their heart and then ask them, what is it they really want to create in the world? What do they want to experience? Experience it through the heart center rather than the mental thinking. And here's an interesting thing. I was coaching somebody and she told me what she wanted to experience. I don't think she was in her heart, because a couple weeks later when I was getting ready to coach her again, and I asked her, okay, so what steps are you going to take to start doing the things you told me you wanted to do? She said, I don't want to do any of it. So I think she had like you said, a spiritual awakening between the first time she was telling me everything she wanted to do or she thought she wanted to do, and the next time that we met, I think she had a complete shift and went, wait a minute, I don't want to do any of that. What I really want to do is this. So interesting, very, very interesting.
Some people never forget the first time they disidentified from their thoughts, and thus briefly experienced a shift in their identity from being the content of their mind to being the awareness in the background. For others, it happens in such a subtle way, they hardly notice it. Or they just notice an influx of joy or inner peace without knowing the reason.
It's interesting that he says that some people never forget the first time that they had a spiritual awakening. I mean, that's really what he's talking about. Disidentified from your thoughts, I think, is the same thing as having that spiritual awakening and then thus briefly experience the shift from being the content of their mind to being the awareness in the background.
It's so true. And I remember my first time in like all the anxiety and emotions that were just like coming through that I was just like, wait, what is happening right now?
Oh my goodness.
But it was just like a fight between like, I guess it was my ego fighting with me, you know, like, because that's what it does.
Right. And then I love this. Or they just notice an influx of joy or inner peace without knowing the reason.
Yes. That's amazing when that happens.
That's a really beautiful thing. And I think the first time that I felt that influx of joy or inner peace was when I was on a guided meditation and the person that was leading the meditation had us go, you know, deeper, deeper, take deep breaths. And then at some point, she said, you are now going to go meet your spiritual guide. And you're going to ask a question and receive an answer. And when you're done, you'll bring your consciousness back into the awareness of the current day, present time. And it was an amazing experience.
I love that. That sounds beautiful.
Yeah, it was beautiful. It was a beautiful meditation. So there's lots of different ways, I believe, that you can have that spiritual awakening. One of the things he says here is, I believe he's just saying, recognizing that we are not our mind, that we are much, much more than that. But it takes going deeper into, I'll call it our inner space, going into our inner being, like taking your attention out of your head and all those thoughts and getting down into your heart center and then just being in love with all the energy that you feel there. I know that I was talking about meditation the other day and how do you get into that meditative state? Well, there's lots of things that you can do. You can, first of all, set a time to get into the meditative state, because when you have the intention and set an intention of showing up for your spirit guides, really you're showing up for yourself. When you set that intention and you make an appointment, your guides, your spiritual essence, that energy shows up for you too. So make an appointment, set the intention, and then you can have things like candles or incense or essential oils or things to help bring your attention present into the moment. And now you've set an environment and you've set your intention. And you can close your eyes, take a deep breath. Maybe you've got some gentle music playing in the background. What you'll notice is there'll be thoughts that come up. Have a pen and paper ready when the thoughts come, because they're going to be like, oh my gosh, I forgot to do the dishes, or I got to take out the trash, or I have to go to work, or I have to, a million thoughts will come to your mind. As each thought comes in, write it down and you can let it go because now you've made a note of it. Okay, I got that. Next. And then you can just wait for the next thought. And whatever it is, write it down. And eventually, the thoughts that come will be from your higher mind. And those are the ones that will be life altering, in my opinion.
That's so true. And I love that you said to make an appointment because it really is making an appointment with your spirit guides. Like, I have a little area in my apartment where I guess I set my appointment to, go inside and try to connect with my spirit guides. And I've noticed after doing it, even just once or twice, like, I walk away from that area and I'm just like cleaning my house or I'm cooking or I do whatever. But if I just so happen, I guess mindlessly to like walk to that area, like I feel present like automatically. And I just feel like this lightness. And it's kind of interesting because it almost feels like that area is like sacred now because I've opened up that space.
Right. It sounds like you've almost created a little vortex there that as soon as you get close to that area, the intention is there that that's when and where you connect with your higher dimensional mind.
Exactly. So I loved how you described that before I said that. That is exactly how it works.
It's beautiful. And that's how I did it as well. That's how I started to have, I guess I'll say, more clear and constant contact with my higher guidance was setting that environment up, making that appointment and showing up. And eventually you get to the point where you don't have to have the candles and the incense, and I call them a crutch. I mean, I did crystals and all, I mean, I did a lot to try and set that environment. And eventually I got to the point where I can take three deep breaths and I can get that connection very strong. So in the beginning, use the tools that show your intention. Like I said, candles, essential oils, incense, crystals, and anything else that makes you feel grounded and centered in your intention to show up and make that connection. And eventually, you'll get to the point where you can just take a few deep breaths and get centered and balanced again.
Right. And then everything else just kind of becomes tools,
Right.
like I enjoy senses, like the smell of things. So even though I can connect by breathing, because I do enjoy sense of smell, like when I burn incense while I'm doing that, that like just puts me in a more light, or I guess you could say it puts me in a nice lighthearted state.
And I'll just say right now, I'm surrounded by many essential oils, little jars of essential oils, and also a lot of crystals. So it's not like you have to let your tools go when you're done, but it's nice to
Yeah.
know you don't have to have them either, but I love them. So
Exactly.
they're here with me.
Yeah, same here. They're just not necessary.
Exactly. It's a
Yeah.
great way to get started and get connected, but it's not something you have to continue to do. Eventually, you can do the three, and then that's important because if you're out in the world somewhere and you get thrown off your center for some reason, you can easily bring yourself back to your center and your connection to all that is by taking three deep breaths. So, but in the beginning, it's great to have tools and an intention.
Yes.
All right. Well, that's the end of this section. I love the next section is called The Voice in the Head. So it sounds like you're gonna have a good time next session. Until then, I hope you have a great rest of your week and we'll see you next week.
Bye.
Bye now.
If you've enjoyed this podcast and you'd like to go deeper into a spiritual conversation, you can join our Facebook group, The Power of Now, A Guide to Spiritual Enlightenment with Gilda and Barbara. Or you can contribute by going to WainwrightGlobal.com/go/support.